Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And welcome to The Food Fight, where we offer a different perspective on food culture issues around Australia and the world.
We'll talk with chefs, producers, business owners and experts to hear their stories and find out what makes them tick.
This episode we're speaking with Jake Smythe and Kenny Graham from Mary's Burgers, The Unicorn, The Lansdowne and PNV about being authentic and giving a fuck while you run your business. Sweet. Welcome to the Food Fight podcast. We're back for another episode. My name's Steph Postuma, joined by Simon Evans.
Hello.
And we find ourselves here sitting in the green room of the Lansdowne Hotel in Chippendale, Newtown, with Jake Smythe and Kenny Graham from Mary's, Lansdowne, The Unicorn, Mary's Underground, PMV.
We'll list them.
Hi.
G'day, guys.
Well, thanks for having us. Thanks so much for joining us. All right. To begin, we would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we gather today. So we acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which we gather and talk today. And we'd like to pay respect to elders past, present, and emerging. All right, guys. There's so much to talk about with you guys. I mean,
is there? I'm not sure there is. We can probably get this done in 10 minutes if you fucking want to quick fire it out. Do you like burgers? Nah.
You smash it out.
You sick of talking about burgers? Yep. Let's fucking bring on the good questions.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Avoid burgers.
All right. Well, look, we try to pick a topic.
Just crunching up. Tearing of paper noises. Just throwed it all around.
Swing it, Steph, wing it.
We try to follow some kind of thread through these podcasts. We definitely go on tangents and things like that as well. But I think that one thread that is found through the work that you guys do is like actually giving a fuck, essentially, in the businesses that you own. Because the hospitality industry, and what we want to talk about, is that the hospitality industry is challenging enough as it is. It's really bloody hard. And there's a lot of people out there who try to build conscience, ethics, social responsibility, and those sorts of things into what they do. But it's such a fucking hard industry that it's really, really challenging. And you guys have done it successfully. And that's awesome. And it can be unique as well. Not everyone can make it in thinking about these things. So let's talk about it. And we're going to start with where you guys started, Mary's. Like, did you guys sit down and have a conversation and say, here are the values that underpin what we're doing, where we're making burgers.
Yeah, we did. Like 5 years after we opened.
But it's interesting that you've prefaced that by saying that you give a fuck. And I think something that Mary's is famous for is this don't give a fuck attitude. But you've got it right. It's about not giving a fuck about what is going on around you and just caring about what you care about. And that's like the idea of just pursuing that holistically and not giving a fuck what people think, what the industry thinks, even what the customers think to a degree. Like, you hope that they'll jump on board because you're doing good things. But, yeah, like, we don't give a fuck because we don't give a fuck about these other things.
We don't give a fuck about the things that don't matter.
Mm.
Yes. You know, and I think what we've done is we've, over time, at the start, we had a general sense about what mattered, and we've distilled it down further and further to a point now where we are very emphatic around what matters to us, We know what's black, what's white. We know where the grey area is. We embrace the grey area so we can find more black and white about what's right and what's wrong for us. But it when you distill it right down, the core of what we care about is quite small. It's very intense and it's very important to us. But we really don't give a fuck about the other things.
Mm.
I could not give a fucking flying fuck about what table X thinks about the noise volume in my venues. I care a great deal about what I'm putting in front of them. I care a great deal about where the animals have come from. I care a great deal around the environment in which the wine is created and grown. I care a great deal around the fact that there's not poker machines in the next room. I care a great deal that upstairs there's young bands being supported through their infancy. But I couldn't give a shit that they've got a fucking problem with the lighting or the new music. And for me, that they could care about that, that would be the deciding factor around supporting me or pulling up what we create down. Like, you could not find someone who's less interested.
Mm.
And I think that's that balance, that razor's edge of, yeah, we do have a reputation. Don't give a fuck. Like, go fuck yourself. But we care so deeply about what we're creating.
Mm.
So you think the fact that you went into it just being like, we don't give a fuck about all these peripheral things that lockdown hospitality venues do, that actually gave you more focus and more time to give a fuck about the things that you guys found important? I think,
like, one thing Jake touched on there, like the distillation of, you know, what you do, it's... I don't understand how people operate restaurants or venues with large menus, like just different offerings. Like, we do like three things really simply and really well. It's like, you know, like the burgers and fried chicken, like live music and service. And that's it. And we just really concentrate on that. And it's one of the other things we really care a lot about is the, you know, we want the customers to be treated, you know, honestly, respectfully and empathetically. But, you know, it's our duty to treat people right when they come into our home, but the same notion, like when people have been disrespectful in their venues, we'll kick them out. And so we told them, there's no bill for you tonight, we don't want your money, but get the fuck out, because you're being so rude to the staff and your friends. People are just, their behavior is absurd.
Yeah, it's a two-way street with customers, and you've got to respect each other. Like,
well, if they chose to come into our house,
yeah, that's the thing.
And like, there is an onus on people. Like, if you want to have a busy venue, you've got to treat people with respect. But at the fundamental breakdown of it, you know, customers have a choice not to come back. They've chosen to come in, so like, what you get is what you get. Like, you can't, like, what's that adage? You
can't get upset.
Yeah, you get what we got. But we got four young kids between us. You get what you get, and you don't get upset. And like, and that's it. And that's a pact between the punter and the customer. When customers don't get what they want, it's an insane fucking idea that every venue that they walk through, that they get exactly what they want.
Yeah.
Like, what is it that you want? You want your own way all the time? Well, that's just an insane way to walk through life. So, imagine me going through and getting pissed off that fucking my strawberry-flavoured fucking Tim Tams aren't in stock and kicking off at the fucking people at Coles or Arnott's for not supplying them anymore. Like, what do you mean? Yeah. You're a tiny part of this world and you're just walking through like, it's too loud, you've run out of burgers, fuck off. Like, it's a ridiculous thing.
You can't please everyone either, so you have to pick
what you don't want
what
to.
You like,
do
and
you
then let people come.
Want to please everyone, neither do I.
That's exactly. The thing. It's like if you're pleasing everyone all the time, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and part of the thing of kicking out assholes from your restaurant is that the people that really love the venue see you do that, and they tell their friends.
Well, there's an element of protection,
that's the values of this place.
Mm. Yeah.
And then you get surrounded by good people, and the assholes stop coming.
There's a bunch of Christians who tried to cancel us last year around Easter because someone put up a really offensive post about Jesus, which was also very funny.
I saw that.
Yeah. It was amazing. But this is what happened. We got Kenny guys get, like, they're getting threatened. They're threatening a racist bloody mum, which is, that's a pretty bloody. That's a whole lot of
stuff. I was asking if my mum was a fag. Like, I don't know where this came from.
We're laughing about it now. We got calls from the coppers saying, hey, listen, we've heard about this. You guys okay? Do you need anything from us? Like, Newtown Police, shout outs, fucking legends. But look, the point to it is the community, our actual community rallied around us and they started turning up in such numbers. We had our busiest weekend ever. And that's a fucking great deal. That's saying a lot in 6 years of Mary's Newtown.
Yeah.
Mm. So we were inundated with people coming down, just saying, we want to be next to you. We want to support you. And that's where you fucking know what you've created. Through COVID, you know, we have seen an outpouring of emotion and time and money and willingness to be in uncomfortable situations from our customers and our community, because we've built that exact relationship with them. They've seen us throw out the fucking idiots. They've seen us stand up for what we believe is right, and we've found a common thread with them, and that we've created that over, you know, years. So our ethics are developing, but they're also consistent.
And there was a real on that, the people that supported us through the whole Jesus scenario, but there was a lot of like God fearing folk who came in and were saying to us and the sort of the staff, like, you know, we're here because what they're doing to you is not good.
Yeah,
like,
to be clear, like, we don't hate Jesus. I don't have a fucking opinion on
we
it.
We both grew up going to that was the whole thing. It was like we both grew up like different levels. Jake very much grew up in the church. I used to have to go to church every Sunday, but it's like we're kind of taking a piss at ourselves. And it's just got turned into this huge thing. But
I got slain in the spirit, and Kenny used to fucking do drawings, colouring drawings of Noah.
Jesus at Sunday school, yeah. I was like, well, I was purple Jesus this week.
I think that makes you qualified to put that post up. Yeah.
Well, it was right. Like, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they were like, you would never say that about Muslims. I was like,
that's
well,
not our culture. That's,
what are you talking about?
That's like, not you're my just
taking
that, like that.
You're taking that somewhere else. And it was, you know, we had a similar scenario, not as media heavy, but we got this hymn board from a salvation shop, like architectural salvation place. And so we made the you know, you put the letters up to put the hymns numbers normally. So what do? We got one. The first thing we put up is fuck Trump. And this American dude was in or something and then like must have tweeted it or something.
I think he was wearing a bald eagle t-shirt and a fucking
MAGA hat. Yeah. Bandanas. He had like 8 bandanas on. But he put it on like a Reddit thread. And next thing you know, we had like, not a heap, but we got like 21 star reviews from like you know, Michigan at 3:09 a.m. saying that the menu was too big. 1 star. Like, you've obviously never been here.
It's hilarious. I think you can wear Trump supporters 1 star reviews as a fucking badge of honor.
Oh, man. Like, it's like
the more of them, the better.
Oh, fucking bring those on. That was hilarious, though.
But again, we got the counterbalance. People were like seeing it. And we called it out, and people were just giving us five. We're the king of 1 and 5 star reviews.
Love it.
So we always say it's all we get. 1s and 5s. Shove your 4 stars up your ass. Have an opinion, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. So let me take you back though, because I think that like what you guys are talking about is the community that you've created around what you guys do, whether that's pubs or burgers or anything else that you do. But like, did you guys have a thought? Did you guys, before you opened the first Mary's, did you look around and think, there's a group of people here who like music, who like getting pissed, who like swearing, who like being fucking Australian pissheads? Well, exactly. Like,
we were just opening
these are the type of people we want to build around us.
We
like,
we're literally building a bar that we would want to drink at in our backyard. We lived in the inner west. We worked in Surry Hills. And there was nothing around our known neighbourhood. King Street at the time was full of great pubs and no bars of note. And, you know, and we were hungry for something different. And we're literally, like, the old story, well, the true story is we wanted to create a bar that had delicious drinks, poured heaps of whiskey, and that we would serve the food that we drank, that we ate when we got hammered, which was KFC and McDonald's, which is why the menu is what it is. Yeah. That's literally the story, and there's nothing behind it. The reason why it's a success is because we're fucking really good at what we do. We've spent 10, 15 years prior to that working in this industry, caring about our industry, and knowing what good customer service was, hating where the direction of hospitality was going in the, you know, these fucking theme bars and everything having to have a fucking backstory and service from people who were more interested in fucking knowing what Reagan's orange bitters was and the difference between Bocca's gin and fucking, like, rather than actually serving the people in front of them. And so we hated the whole element of the industry, and we wanted just to provide ourselves with our perfect bar.
Mm. Yeah, we have a real issue with like concepts, or people say, oh, it's such a good concept. I'm like, it's not a fucking concept. And like, to the point that even the menu and the cocktail list, like, they were not finalized till like a week before we opened. Like, no, it wasn't a plan. We just knew because we were actually pretty good at our
jobs. We making ourselves look like fucking dumb bums? Who we could just sit here going, yeah, we designed this 6 months out and we had this marketing plan and we've executed everything. Nah, man.
We checked the market and found the burgers were big right now.
No, we're winging this shit.
It was purely around, like, we just knew that we were good at our job and we would show people a good time. And whatever we were serving them was kind of not the point.
Nah.
Like, it was, we chose burgers because we thought they were fashion proof. Like, we eat them when we're hungover. We'd finish work at 2 a.m, we'd get hammered at the pub and get McDonald's on the way home. Yeah. And so, like, that's kind of the main reason. But we also thought that everyone has a bit of a burger. Everyone has a burger once a month or at least, you know, 3-4 times a year.
Well, like, especially if you're a drinker. If you go to a pub and you, like, if you find yourself at pubs drinking beers, you're going to find yourself in front of a burger at some point.
And that was the whole reason. And then when we did get lucky in the sense, it's just that burgers became super fashionable.
Yeah,
super,
but burgers became, like, there's an element to the fact that burgers became super fashionable because of the work that we fucking did in legitimizing it as something worthwhile.
Are you claiming the burger boom in Australia? You're claiming?
No.
Is it a coincidence? Or
Jake's pointing at himself.
What I'm saying is that without Mary's in that role of legitimizing it in the way that we did with great service, I think it elevated it from a fucking Instagram trend to something that was legitimately belonging to hospitality properly. Mm. Like, you go across the world, there's amazing burgers across the world. Some of my favorite, you know, like the ones that you have to give shout outs, In-N-Out Burger, Shake Shack, right? They're fucking shitty places to eat. Delicious burgers, crap places to eat.
Mm.
Mary's is a fucking great place to eat.
Mm.
It's fucking cool. The music is great. You know, it's full of interesting people trying to give you a level of service.
The walls are pretty funny.
You know, yeah, there's input on the, there's comedic gold on the walls. Like, the reality is, like, it is different to most burger experiences. When you think of the best burgers in the country, the majority of them are fucking, like, glorified takeaway joints that are terrible to dine in.
Yeah.
Ours is not, none of our venues are terrible to dine in. They're fun. They're literally intoxicating. They demand that you sit for more than just a burger and fuck off. We don't sell milkshakes, man.
Yeah.
Like, we don't sell fucking milkshakes. We serve fucking whiskey. So it is a different thing. And I think that what we did was legitimize it in the hospitality space for chefs and restaurateurs and somms and bartenders, where they're like, oh, this is a legit fucking joint.
Yeah.
This is a venue that, take the burger out, we'd still come and hang out in.
Mm.
And it just helps that the burger. Do you think that
if you, no matter what food you decided to do in that last week running up to it, just the fact you had all the things that mattered right, you had good service, music, some food, good booze.
Yeah.
Do you think whatever food you'd have done would have worked?
We would have maybe found it. We would have found a path. We just weren't, like, it wasn't set in stone is the point, you know what I mean? Like, we would have got to what we truly needed or wanted to do. But yeah, it didn't really matter. Like, we welcomed everyone with open arms.
We may not have done what we've done. Like, I'm not saying, like, the burger explosion is a real thing that we benefited from. I'm not saying we claimed that we created that.
You did, but
did it come across?
Rewind 2 minutes.
We can just get us a snippet.
Anyone who's listening to this who knows me, you'll be
never
like,
gonna let Jake live it down, even though it's not really.
Oh, he's talking about that again.
He's talking about the time that he invented the hamburger. So back in 1967 when I was at McDonald's, the original.
Have you seen that movie, The Founder?
Yeah.
That's this guy.
About my dad.
Let me ask then. Like, so, once you establish Mary's, and we'll move on to some of the other venues in a sec. But, like, you did what you did with the passion that you were doing it, and with that sort of ethos behind you, not giving a fuck about the peripheral things, but giving a fuck about what you cared about. Was there a moment where you were like, fuck, we've got people who really care about us now. We've got a community. Like, did that come into opening the Unicorn or the Lansdowne or these sorts of places where you're like, we've found our base, we've found our people, and they're gonna support us?
It was pretty quick. I remember, like, I was pretty, probably still drunk, not hungover, still drunk. I slept there one night because we used to always hang out for beers after, and I had to be there in the morning because Rachel, who was doing it, still does her books. Come in every Monday morning to do it early, like in the 8 or 9. So I would have to,
an interesting time.
And I was like, fuck, going home. So I slept there and I walk up and just sort of, and you start looking at the, I started crying a little bit because it's like you realize that it was working and it was going to work. Because you never know. I'd had a bar before with a couple of pals in Edinburgh, you know, and it's like, you know, I remember we've experienced it since. Like, business can be a slog, you know, like a real fucking slog. And Mary's was like so quickly successful and embraced, and just that realization. I'm talking like 4 or 5 weeks in, like it was really early. You're just like, we've done it. Like, we've done it. Like, we've not, we haven't, there's always that fear of buying yourself a job if you start your own business. A shit job, like, so it's and we hadn't realized we hadn't done that. Like, we'd done something that was pretty special for the community, you know what I mean? Like, it's you know, like we always say, it's very, it is what it is. It's a simple operation, but it was embraced and it was clearly gonna be around for the
we nailed some things, some simple things away that were kind of created the mechanics of what the business being a success. I agree with Kenny there, but we did manage to step outside of it pretty quickly and start seeing it for what it was, and then start dreaming up what the future could look like and what was going to be important to us about how we built that and what was going to be what was going to be the ethics that guided us. And we're both, you know, I'm not sure if this is coming across in this podcast already, but you know, we're pretty definite folk who are, you know, we know what we want and we know what we like, and we just allowed that to inform us, and we isolated some very key things early on that were always going to be, that it was always going to be about the local community, that it was always going to be about what we put in front of them on a day-to-day basis. It was always going to be about a level of service that went above and beyond, not because we had an expectation around it, but because we wanted that to define our day-to-day. We wanted to know, we had this saying, every day a little bit butter, you know, and it was just, you know, every day you've just got to turn up and be that little bit better, you know, like just constantly working on what we're doing, even in such a simple operation. And that's rung true, and it affects not just a service mentality, but also, you know, who we support and how we support.
To really nail like a simple concept, what is simple on the front of it, there's a lot of fucking work goes behind it. Like, you can't just, you couldn't just have two random dudes rock up and open a bar like successful. You guys obviously knew what you were doing.
Well, you can, but they fall apart pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly. So like to have that simple service, like to have a simple burger, it's got to be really good. Like, from your sourcing to your cooking, everything's got to be bang on. Because when there's nothing to hide behind, if the patty's shit, then you're fucked. No one's gonna like your burger. Same with service. Yeah. Like, staff can be super relaxed and super chill, but only if they know what they're doing. Otherwise, they just look shit.
We always call it like it's just organized chaos. You know, you've got to be so fucking, you've got to be organized to a point of, you know, of militancy so you can create chaos. It's only, otherwise it's just shit.
Yeah.
It's not chaotic. It's shit.
It's not fun chaos that way.
No,
either.
It's everyone's fucking terrible. It's just, it's unorganized. You're missing your fries. You've got you're waiting 25 minutes for a fucking drink. Like, no one's having fun if they're fucking waiting 25 minutes for a drink. No one ever in the history of hospitality. But if your fucking waiter's coming over and having a shot with the table next to you and giving you a beer at the same time, you're fucking fine.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah. We really got up staff for the first 6 to 12 months. Just like, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. Like, you know, if people are waiting for drinks, if someone's standing at the bar and they're like, I don't know, checking their phone or talking to someone, just came on shift, you'd be like, the fuck are you doing? You got a job to do. We're here to do something.
Were staff kind of surprised by that? By thinking maybe they'll come into work at this kind of slapdash.
Yeah, but we quickly weeded those ones out. Yeah. Because we had an amazing core team to start with.
Dream team.
Like Louise Dowling, who's now our business partner at PMV. We had the great and mighty Ty Tate, who's been in and out of the company for a little while. And we had Bruno, who was Ty's, Bruno Wicks. No, those guys, and then the, you know, Lukey Powell, who opened the kitchen with us, you know, and then Johnny and Hendy, the fucking Indo boys, who's been there since they're still there, and then the people on the outskirts, the more casual people, players who, and then you know, or people who came later who filled it in, but that opening team was fucking amazing.
It's a pretty strong team.
It was amazing.
They were doing it. They'd have people come in trial. And I'm like, how are they going? Like 7 minutes, they're like, they ain't going to cut it. Yeah. Like, this straight away.
It was hardcore. Like, it was so fucking busy. It was so busy. And we were trying to work our way through this tiny place. We were prepping fucking burgers by hand in there on this fucking 2.5 horsepower fucking benchtop grinder. And we were fucking doing, you know, like, I don't know, like 400, 500 kilos a week out of that joint. It was brutal. It was brutal. It was curing and smoking around bacon, fucking breaking down 250, 300 chickens at a time, storing it. Who knows where we did it? I don't know how we got it done. But it was...
I was just in that kitchen all afternoon. I was just like...
How did you do it? But it was just one of those things that you'd get a fucking box of chicken in on a fucking Saturday and you'd be breaking them. You know, I'd have to break down 100 chooks between, you know, 2:30 and 4:30, you know, of service, but the kitchen's open the whole time. I'm just tucked away in a little corner. It was hard, man. But but this is the thing. From that fucking, from that like that pure place of struggling and survival, you know, we knew how, we knew that we'd kind of bottled lightning and that we could, if we got it right now, that we could kind of, if we pushed on, we could make it. We could kind of expand that idea pretty
quickly.
It's
always about the idea of honesty. If all you're doing is being honest all the time, it's like going into a test with all of the answers, because you never get like stumped.
Yes.
Like when anyone wants, you're just like, this is what we do. Like for us, there's clear, we've never really had many tough decisions. Like we went from Mary's to the Unicorn. Very different. Pubs are very different.
Yeah, let's talk very about different. Like going into Unicorn and... Like, I mean,
you just managed to lose money for 2 years, but create an amazing brand and really nail down on the experience.
Yeah. But even like the idea of what it was going to be, I mean, it was a beautiful Art Deco pub on Oxford Street. So we just sort of delved a little bit into the history and just ripped out all the shit that was in there and turned it into a beautiful old Aussie Art Deco pub again.
Yeah.
And did counter meals and had a pie warmer on the bar top. You know,
it took time took time for people to get it. You know, I think the people who really got it were all in Newtown, not in Paddington. And now, like, it's a part of Paddington that is really viciously supported by the locals.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so stupendously supported by the local community. And we saw that through COVID most recently. Like, we stayed open the whole fucking time. There isn't I don't think there was another pub in that area that did that.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I'm just going to make the claim, Kenny. Not backwards on, you know. Oh, go and announce it on a podcast, you fucks. We'll start a podcast war.
Tell us about, like, I mean, if people aren't across the Pokies issue, they can go back and listen to the massive episode, the 2-hour-long episode
we did
about it. Who did
you interview with that? I'm interested in that.
We talked to, fucking, I can't even remember. There was a policymaker who called in, and who do we have on the Pokies podcast? I forget. Now,
which is me and Andy.
Yeah, but, we had a couple of call-ins. I can't remember exactly who they were. I mean, like, you guys went in there, you just said you lost money, and like at the start, and like, you know, obviously, tell us about the decision to just be like, fuck Pokies, and you know, just tell us about that decision. Let's go.
From the start, it was just never on the table.
Yeah,
we said from the start that would never be something that we believe in. This is the classic line from us is, how do you create community while pulling the fucking stuffing out of another one?
Mm.
And we're all about creating community. So how on earth can you sit there in front of me and say, oh, my local pub's about the local community and we do this, this and this, and then you're ripping the fucking heart out of another one. The person next door is fucking, you know, emptying their fucking savings, destroying their children's future unfairly. It's causing absolute social destruction, pressure on the health department, pressure on the police. Like, this, it's untold fucking destruction that these things cause, all for fucking tax revenue, which does not even offset the fucking pressures that it puts on the other parts of the economy that we don't see, because it's just easy to play the fucking, to shift money around. But that's me ranting about why we didn't do it. But the clearest thing I can say is that we knew that it was anti-community.
Yep.
And if it's anti-community, then it's anti what we stand for. And it was a very clear decision to never be involved with them. And I tell you, it's never once crossed my mind.
Yeah, of course.
Even in the middle of losing money, you know, month in, month out.
It's like, you know, all that, the sort of social, economic, political sort of like carnage that it causes, like, put all that heavyweight stuff aside for a minute, but what it also just did in the pub community was one, it took over all the live music rooms, so it kind of decimated that. And two, it just made people not give a fuck about their offering. Yes. It's pretty much the reason why pub food got so shit.
Well, yeah.
Because no one cared anymore. They're just 100%. Like, oh, it's just people just want sustenance and they're going to be in here just giving them money anyway. But it's like, we run a booze and food like operation in a pub and it's fucking tough.
Mm.
And I tell you, and it's got somewhere now, like, what, we've been there 5 years or something?
Is it 5 years?
5 years, yeah. And it's like, and most of it is off the back of, we've got a fucking stonking Saturday night there. And like, yeah. Sort of youth in the area fucking love it. And it'll be queued down the street. And that's really what keeps it going. Like, it's pubs are tough. And we try to bring like bar restaurant people into pub world and like fucking broke them. Like, just because it's, you know, it's not like you turn up to your job at 3, you set up, you have staff dinner, then you just pump out service for 4 hours and you fucking all high five and get pissed and go home.
That's a different world.
You're in there at 10 in the morning, you serve like 4 people all afternoon because you don't have pokies, so no one's really coming into the pubs. And then you have like slow slog to start the week, and it's all just make your own money in like a couple of nights.
Made a
it's
habit just, of breaking so fucking many... poor resto chefs, you know, who come in either at the Unicorn or help out at Mary's Newtown. I'd be like, yeah, okay, come on. They come in from like overseas, and they're like, can I get a job for a couple of weeks? You know, while I'm fucking finding my shit. Yeah, I'm always in the shit. Come by, and then just like they'll be like, I'll sign up for 3 weeks, and 4 days in, they're like, bro, I can't do this.
It used to annoy me when chefs who were like from a good restaurant would be like, oh yeah, I'll come and help her. They'll be fun. And then you just ride them so hard that they would be just break. They're like, how fun was that? They're like, it's not fun at all. They're like,
yeah, because you know, like they, you know, like I said, like they're in, breaking down fucking 100 chickens next to me in the middle of serving fucking 800 burgers.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? In a fucking 12-hour, in a 10-hour period, in a fucking kitchen with 4 people that's like tiny, and the numbers are just, they're like, what? How are you doing this? And it's like, I'm a fucking hard cunt. And you told me you were too. I'm fucking, I've got kids I need to feed. What do you fucking think I'm doing?
The next thing he's telling is he's coming to help out. It's for money. It's got a job.
So not asking true. For a favour.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, but if there was an attitude of like, oh, it's so cute, you guys are cooking burgers and you're really busy. I like how hard this would be. Yeah, listen, they're so good that it fucking takes real time and real energy and real effort. Mm. And that's why it tastes as fucking good as it does, by the way. You know, it's not a secret. Great food takes time. Mm. This is why it takes time and it takes energy and it tastes fucking great.
Mm.
So how did you guys go about turning pub food into something you were proud of offering whilst breaking down chefs and chickens?
Well, we took a couple. It was the first time we managed to take a couple of the staff. The people that had been killing it at Mary's, like, we sort of brought them in and a sort of bit of a share at the pub.
Mm.
Old Drew Corbell,
yeah,
Drew Corbell, the only chef I haven't broken yet.
He's still there.
He's got a dodgy ticker, but he's still fucking working. Oldest cunt in the fucking in the company.
Chilled guy in the world. Though. He's like, yeah.
Meanwhile, his heart's just fucking erratic.
About to give in. But there's a lot of work there as well. I mean, it's, you know, you look at the menu. It's just, again, it was like the honesty around it. You don't have to make any decisions. You're like, well, what do you get when you go to the pub? You get steak and chips, you get schnitties, you get pies. Like, you're like, this. The menu's written for you.
Yeah.
It just depends what lengths you want to go to make it good. I made it great. And Jake had that sort of stroke of genius doing the, what do we call it, the waving schnitty. We always call it like the schnitty with the wing on. So you got the brown and white meat. And it's fucking delicious.
Mm.
And we make it all in house. We go to like these mass, like some of the big food people we buy food from me, and they're like, oh, we got this like mad snitty making
machine. We can machine. Make your snitty. It's like, oh, you can.
The ones that look like a love heart.
Yeah. Oh, mate,
it's like, can you make them look like a map of Australia? And whilst they're telling you they can, you just walk off.
Yeah, I'm gonna move.
Programming it into the machine.
When they start thinking about it and designing it, they just fuck off.
Mm. Yeah. I remember when I first went to the Unicorn. It was just after you first opened, and people had told me that you guys had opened the Unicorn. I was like, oh, fuck, this will be interesting. And I had the mixed grill. Yeah. You still got the mixed grill on?
No one bought it.
It was too much waste.
No one would buy it. But like, the thing is that if I go to a pub now, the only reason I ordered a mixed grill, because I knew that you guys had the Unicorn. Like, I would not have fucking ordered a mixed grill at any other pub. You know what I mean? Like,
dude,
good. Mixed grill is dangerous.
That was the hospital one. Other restaurant owners and shit that would come in, they'd be like, I come here for the mixed grill.
Yeah, dude. That's mixed grill is so good.
It's waste heavy. It's hard to put liver on another part of the menu. You can just,
use it up.
But mate, it was fucking so delicious. But like, again, you know, your punters will tell you what they want. And what they want is fucking, it's really large. They did 365 schnitties there last week.
Yeah.
On fucking a limited fucking COVID fucking like 50 people at a time. It's fucking bananas. It's so good. Like that's, I don't know how many covers we did last week, but you know, like it's a good like third of people having fucking schnitties every day. Like, which is pretty crazy, which when you think about it, you're like, yeah, that's about right. That's what a pub should be.
It's that thing of like,
it's not like, I don't want to fucking like have a fancy food in a pub. It's fucking pub food.
Like schnitties can be so good, but they're just so often done shit.
Yes.
And pub food is so like that. Like how like a really well cooked rest of steak with chips is fucking beautiful. But how often is it just shit in a pub? Because no one gives a fuck.
Yeah.
So it's really, it's, I mean, I'm saying easy in a sense of like, if you kind of know what you're doing, it's really easy to make that just really tasty and people go crazy for it. But just by, you know,
I think the hard work though is
in spend your time. Like it's, we put the time in the, there was one of the quick lessons we learned at Mary's was we used to do, if you got there the very, very early days, we used to do skinny fries or hand cut chips. And they were fucking delicious, but they were like, people spending hours doing 50 kilos of chips, and you chips, sell out by 6:30. We're like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. Yeah. And it's so we just sucked. We only buy like, you know, frozen chips, like same at the Unicorn. We buy crinkle cut chips, like fuck, they're fucking delicious when they're done right. Salt and pepper, and you put the effort into the schnitzel or like the salad. Like the salad is literally like just like wedges of iceberg. But the dressing's fucking
with the world's greatest. Yeah, you thank me one for that one as well. I think the work with pubs is to find the right fit. So we worked a long time to find the right steak for our fucking, we call it the daily steak. It's just it's the cheap steak.
The butthole steak.
Yeah. It's called a spider steak. It's a Pope's eye. It's a fucking, it's the sphincter, basically. And it's not the actual sphincter, but it's sort of just around that. And it's the fucking greatest cut. Yeah, it looks like a Wu-Tang symbol. Literally does. Look it up. Yeah. So good.
I've got a picture of one that looks exactly like a Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang buttholes.
Wu-Tang steak.
Yeah, yeah. But it took us a long time to find that and get it at a price point that I could put it on a plate and make money, and the customer was getting a pub steak that wasn't a fucking rubbery, you know, shitty fucking rump steak from northern Queensland from those Brahman cross cattle.
Yeah.
You know, we've got, it was from Rangers Valley, you know, this amazing fucking producer, and it was a cut that was affordable. So it was everything that we wanted, and that took fucking ages for us to find. And that kind of time and persistence is what makes the difference between a pub and a great pub. Or any venue, and we could have put another great steak on, but it would have had to be $5 more for the customer. And when you're walking in and you're having to buy a steak at $36 in a pub, then all of a sudden you're like, "Whoa, what? I don't want to pay more than $30." It just feels uncomfortable, especially with the type of pub we're trying to open. So look, it's when you scratch this, like you said, front facing, it's a simple operation, and all of our operations are pretty simple. But behind it, you've got to work really fucking extra hard to make sure.
Hard conversations with suppliers to make sure they don't take advantage of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they'll slyly put up the prices all the time. And especially the meat boys, because they love it because, you know, they'll sell you the secondary cuts. Like I remember I used to work at Porteño for like 2 or 3 years, and that was they did the entraña. I think they still do it, like the inside skirt. And it was cheap when they got it. And I think it still is probably one of the greatest steaks
I've ever had in my life.
But it went from like being like 13, 14 bucks a kilo to that. And like the last I had, it was like they're selling it they're getting sold it for like $38 a kilo. And it's like
all on the bay, on the back of Porteño making
and
it fucking.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And we're like the restaurant can do that. So it's like as a hospitality people, you're constantly getting fucked over by suppliers who are trying to cash in because there's no transparency about them being a cunt. It's like, but we can't just turn around and be like, oh yeah, we steak's $42 now because they just whapped up the prices and we just passed it on to you. Like you've got to argue. You got to really fight. All the customers appreciate how much all the shitty conversations we've had to keep the prices down.
But I think it's going to be interesting in the next 6 months because, you know, Kenny and I have been talking about this a little bit. With the coronavirus hitting and the way that it's going to affect spending on people, I think people's dollars are going to become far more thoughtful than they have been. And I think all of these decisions will become really very important and become a little more on the front of the punter's mind because their dollar is going to mean more to them. So they're going to scrutinize where they spend it. And I really think that venues that are well placed are ones that put their community first and foremost, and that they do fight for those things.
Yeah, well, building a community and building regulars and people, your patrons thinking that they understand what you're about and feeling like they're a part of it, then you're supported. If you're just another fucking restaurant that people think, all right, I'm in this place, TripAdvisor or whatever, Google restaurants, and then just go to the first place that pops up, like, it's unlikely that place is going to be awesome and that they're going to return there. You know what I mean? Like, as you said, like making all those hard decisions, all the things you've done in the lead up, and building a community is the thing that's going to also allow people to support you. But we'll get on to, like, let's get on to COVID in a sec, because I want to talk about Underground now. We're gonna throw away Jake's mic cover. Do you want to talk about Underground?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so like, how Underground is awesome. Me and my mates have a Christmas dinner every year where we go and eat steak somewhere. And last year it was Underground.
Cool.
And that was fucking awesome. The blue cheese and the onions and yeah, really, really good.
You're welcome.
But thank you.
Yeah. So when I first found blue cheese, it was
surprising.
Yeah. I left it out for quite a long time.
And I put them in this batter and I fried them.
Yeah.
Seen everywhere.
But it's a very unique place now. And I want you to give us an understanding of, like, how has the Mary's ethos, if you want to call it, I kind of don't like the word ethos for some reason, just because of the way it sounds. But how have you guys, like, how did you come about, you know, taking over Underground? Like, it was a tender process, right? And you had to have probably all your ducks in a row to show the people what you were going to do down there and bring the music and the occasion and the experience into that venue with the thoughtfulness that you have in all the rest of your venues.
Well, it's a complicated subject. It's the Underground as you know it, when you went, is no more.
Okay.
Like, it's that's the word that everyone's using. We had to pivot.
we pivoted before COVID. We'd actually made the decision that it wasn't working.
It was one of these learning curves.
It was
again.
Beautiful, and we're very proud of what we did there.
It was so sick.
Some of the best nights. I think it's
best nights there, but it was just, it didn't land in the way that we thought it would. And that's okay.
Sydney's pretty conservative, and it's like, you know, the people that we try to sort of transcend our brand, if you want to call it that, into that world, which is a world where we're pretty comfortable with. Like, we never would get overly dressed up, but we're pretty comfortable in a two-hat restaurant, whatever. And we sort of try
very
to bring
comfortable in a two-hat restaurant wearing whatever the fuck.
But it's, try to bring our world into that world. So it was fun as hell. And it was like, and the food was delicious and the service was great and the wine list is like out of control. And, you know, you just very quickly find out that the people who loved it and loved having that amount of fun and it being that loud, like they'd come once a year.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't afford it. And the people that can afford to eat like that twice a week, once a month, whatever, it's a little bit loud for them. You know what I mean? So we kind of just sat in that middle. So, I mean, it's not, as in it's like open every night and it's no longer, that's the case. But it's still a living and breathing thing. We had already changed to just going very much more like live music and shows and events. So we can do, like, if people want to have a band, want to have a dinner, like, book the thing, like, done. Like, so you can still recreate that.
Yeah, we
actually put on our own night. So it'll be like, you know, the Mary's Underground of old, and get the old bands in and do the, like, things off the old menu, like the rotisserie duck or whatever you want. Like, it's still, like, can live in that world. But it's, yeah, we just quickly found that it's, you know, we think it's a scary thing and you're sort of scared of failure. But you're like, the last thing you want to do is sit in a big pile of fucking debt thinking how dumb you were that your pride stopped you from just making these decisions that you knew were for the best.
And it was very clear, like, the punters told us what they wanted and there was not enough of them that fucking wanted to be there every week, and that's okay. And the reality is we were also like, when we kind of after Christmas we kind of regrouped and we're like, okay, so it's going to be a long push forward from here to next Christmas where we made money, you know, like, but where, what are we going to do? And there was a very honest conversation within the group, and it was literally, what are our strengths are? What's the industry calling out for? And more live music venues was it. And they wanted, people wanted the live music, but they didn't want to necessarily dial in. We had an overflowing booking calendar from the lands. They're like, fuck, let's just turn this into a 100% live music venue.
Yeah, okay.
And so, and but also the beauty of that space was we were able to book things in. I think James Morrison was booked in for two nights to do a full sit-down meal, you know, like the
such but, a cool venue.
Yeah, like amazing. Like we were doing, but people were actually buying tickets to see this person and getting dinner as a part of it. And rather than the onus always being on the restaurant to bring people in and the entertainment to be for, you know, paid for out of the restaurant, which was, you know, like I said, it was a great idea. We tried our fucking hardest. It was a great time, and it was some of the best meals I've ever had. And I've seen people have
a better time. Dude, we had a
such a good time there. Yeah.
Like people had people on some of their faces, like they've never had a better night out in a restaurant.
Yeah, dude,
like for sure. But
it was just too soon, or is it something you guys would revisit that concept? Because it kind of does hark back to that very classic.
I think Sydney's just too overly I'm from Scotland, obviously originally, but I'm not from Edinburgh. But I lived in Edinburgh for 10 years, and Edinburgh's a bit similar. It's too conservative for certain things, like things that would work in Glasgow, or things that would work in, I don't know if it would work in Melbourne, like working in another city in the world. It'd be fucking to be beating the doors down.
I think if it was in a different part of town. And it wasn't as big, the overheads weren't as large. Mm. Then you could give it another shot. Mm. If that was a 50-seater, you know, and you were and you knew you're in a part of town where people were going to travel for it, yeah. And that experience, then yeah, 100%, because your overheads are just so different. It took a lot. It was a big venue. It took a lot to open the doors every day.
Yeah,
in that model. So that was the major thing. If we could have somehow put an elastic band and shrunk down the operating costs of that venue and not been in the fucking circular key, then yeah, for sure. I think the model would have worked for, like I said, 50 people, more intimate shows, it would have fucking crushed it. But, you know, we did it at the same time, it wouldn't have had the romance of it being the old basement.
But
that's what we fucking went for, and it didn't come off and, oh, fuck it, whatever.
Things that you probably touched on in your other podcast was like the... Like, you know, the pressure, and we've always done this, and this is not a bullshit statement, but the pressure, the spotlight on hospitality companies to be paying their staff, right?
Yeah.
You know, and also in living in live music world and us wanting to make sure that artists were getting paid, like, you know, I've been very much supporters of, like, people not giving their art away for free. And we're like, we'll back that all fucking day. And then the community just has to rally around us and get the money coming through the doors. And that's where it just sort of faltered, because... It was so expensive to run. Yeah, to run a restaurant, like, you know, coming out of this post-COVID, there's a lot of talk about where fine dining sits, because how can you afford to run restaurants that even at the prices they were charging their labor bills, like 40% plus a week? Like we were there plus entertainment, you know, plus everything. And you try and pass
it. It's a hard venue to sort of manage, right, in a service. Like, it's big and it's sprawling and, like, there's a lot of distance between bars and tables. And
venues like that, you have to staff it as if it's going to be full or close to most nights, because you don't know.
Absolutely. And when you're not, you just take a bath.
Yeah.
You know, and that Tuesday, Wednesday, if it doesn't fucking hit the numbers you need, you're fucked.
You
lose 10 grand that week and you go, oh, great. Mm. Thank you so much. And then what's it come down to? It comes down to Monday, Tuesday, not firing. And you think about where Sydney's been in the last 5 years, you know, it's not been in a great place to support fucking diners, restaurants on Tuesday, Wednesday nights of that scope.
Mm.
Like, we've learned a lot of lessons through it. But the important thing for me is we learned our lesson before fucking COVID. And we'd had it booked in. You know, we just finished our third weekend of shows down there, you know, under the new model when we got shut down. And we'll go back. We'll fucking plug away and make sure that it's a viable live music space, as long as our fucking landlords come to terms with the fact that we can't pay fucking rent. That we really can't.
Yeah.
Have you guys had much experience? What happened in your part of the world with landlords?
Varying. Some have been very good. I'll try not to talk about my direct experience too much. Well, maybe listen.
I'm interested.
One was great, one less so. Okay. And most people, I've got friends who are in four bars now in Wollongong, and some of their places were council owned, some were in part of the kind of the mall, GPT, and then rent got just waived straight away. Other people.
Council owned?
Yeah, so it was the old, my friends have a bar in the old Births, Deaths and Marriages building. And it's still owned by council, so they're renting directly from council.
How is that?
So they got it. I'm pretty sure they got it.
Let me get into that fucking council rent.
And other things. Yeah, there was varying things.
Yeah, I'm fucking paying shit, motherfucker.
Go Gladys. I mean, realistically, there wasn't enough support from the government for things like that straight away. So the onus was put on landlords, who, you know, they're going to lose money. We're losing money. So it was about kind of sharing the load of it. And I think some landlords did that, and some didn't.
Yeah, it really comes down to it in a lot of aspects. It's like the make or break for a lot of businesses right now. Because honestly don't understand. I know what it's taken for us to get through.
Mm.
And I honestly do not understand like how 50% or more can do it.
Mm.
Like literally, like in terms of that timeline of what happened. So you shut, everyone knew March was looking a bit iffy. So everyone held off paying February invoices.
Yeah.
You still ordered a bit. We got to the end of March. So then in April, you got to pay all of February and all of March. And then if you're doing your fucking PYG and super quarterly, then you've got to pay all the invoices for February and March and all of that in like April. Like and it was, how the fuck?
Yeah.
Well, and it's impossible.
And that's the reality of hospitality. You're always that month behind. Like everything's been on credit and you're paying and you're paying and paying. So as soon as you stop, it's not like, okay, cool, we're right here. It's like, oh, and everything's
slamming behind you. It's like the train at the front, you know, in those cartoons, and all of a sudden they're boom, boom, they start piling up on each other.
I think
it is what it's like, you know. Like Kenny said, we know what it's taken financially for us to come through this period, and I don't know how so many people are going to fucking. I know that people aren't. I think come December, it's going to be a very different landscape that we're sitting in. And
I think a lot of people have got their rent postponed, which is like great. It's a very short term solution, but come 6 months' time when everyone's paying 125, 150% rent, that's going to really that's going to sneak up on hospitality, and that's when you're going to see,
especially when the consumer spending drops too.
Yeah,
you know, when discretionary spend, which is why it goes back to my point earlier. You know, like I think the venues that are best positioned to weather through this are ones that have a natural community that care because of the goodwill and the social capital that they've built in together.
Yeah,
and and without those things, if you're a venue of convenience or of pure experience, you're going to struggle.
Yeah,
you need to be a venue that has a natural community that you are not going to drop off the fucking radar of at the same rate as your fucking discretionary spending. The difference between
someone's built-in spending. Like, I know every week I'm going to spend money at like a couple of my favorite bars. Like, that's like built into my personal budget.
Yeah, but I've got $300 withdrawal a week.
Yeah. But like going to that.
How much is it in Wollongong?
On a Friday night at about 11 o'clock. Like,
yeah. $350 on a Friday. I know this is my built-in spending.
So, they'll make me pay my tab eventually and I'll be fucked.
Yeah, all right. Well, we're on to COVID. Which question do I start? Okay, firstly, I'll start with, what was it like standing down staff? Like, and for guys who give a fuck as much as you guys do and build a family, for lack of a better word, of staff. And how was that experience? And what have you guys done about supporting them?
It was harrowing. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my entire life. Forget professional, just in my entire world. It was so difficult. It was made more difficult by the certain decisions that the government made, like making the onus on the bringing people back on JobKeeper around us. That was difficult because we knew that we couldn't bring everyone back just because the government said it wasn't an entitlement.
We got our hopes up that we could really help people out. So you're like, you know, there's no job for you right now, but all this news is coming out, we'll be in touch. And then over the next sort of couple of weeks, we're like, we can barely bring anyone back. Like, it's just, it's impossible.
It's fiscally irresponsible for us to kind of just go, oh, yeah, we're going to pay everyone $750 who can, just because, you know, like, because the government says it's in time. It's like, no, we've still got to fucking, this is a business. We don't exist.
And you've just been cleaned out. There's no money. And then you got a bankroll. Effectively, what is the dole? You know what I mean? Like, we had a lot of conversations with it and with our business partners, obviously, because it was one of the toughest times you'll ever go through. And it was very much like Centrelink got overrun. So the quick snap decision was, let's just make the businesses do it for us. Yeah. Like we'll sort it out. But they'll do it all. They'll do the one touch payroll. We'll just get the information and send the money out, and they deal with the queues. Like that's kind of what it felt like.
And it kept the unemployment numbers off their books.
Yeah.
You know, which is a positive thing for Australia in the long term, you know, because of the way that the international markets will recover. You know, we'll look like we've come through it in a way that we really haven't.
Mm.
But, you know, from the externalities of it, people will just look at the numbers and go, oh, we never got over 12% unemployment where, you know, the United States is at 18%.
It'll come, though. And it's like, I started hearing they're like, they're using statistics, because normally it's about unemployment or whatever, and it's always a bit vague, but they start looking at numbers of who's paying PAYG tax and watching, like, and whatever you call it in different parts of the world, but watching those numbers plummet. Like, yeah, that's a sort of real way of seeing. Because right, everyone's got a few, like job, these, you're paying tax. But it's like, and if there's, let's see who stops paying tax, and that's a sort of
really quantifiable metrics and identify these problems.
Yeah, it's still to come. Like, you know, hospitality was one of the first to go. It'll be one of the last to come back, but there's still, you know, construction's going off its fucking tits now.
Off its tits.
And like, and the government's like, oh, let's put more people in job. Let's build all this. Build. And who's going to be buying these fucking apartments in 12 months' time when you're already predicted that the property market's going to, like, the floor's going to fall out of it? So it's like, then they all got a job. There used to be like waves of unemployment through industry.
Well, I find it strange that they're deciding to try to pump it into the fucking housing sector when it's already overblown. You know, this is a time
policy
to be building.
Is absolutely nuts, man.
They should be building.
You've
got to
spend 150 grand. Who are the people that have 150 grand lying around to renovate their house? They're people with fucking that aren't working. Yeah. They're fucking retirees who already have it. They don't need it.
Yeah, who don't need it.
Yeah.
And I know the aim's to get the fucking tradies working so that they're still spending money. But the reality
is still going well. And my mate just started a building company like earlier this year, and he was shitting himself to start with. He's like, nah, it's been fine.
Yeah.
It's like work's still going. People still paying their bills mostly. Like,
we'll see.
It's such an opportunity for the country to rebuild itself. I feel like we've spoken about it a bit, you know, in our little between Kenny and I. But in like, there was a sense, very real sense to me, that the future was just being thrust upon us with no real. There was a really very reduced sense of agency around what our future would look like as a community, as a society, as individuals even. And, you know, what I kind of, I was talking to someone the other day, I coined the great exhalation. Mm. You know, we all just had a moment to fucking breathe the fuck out.
Mm.
And, you know, part of that is that when you breathe in, it's new life. You're getting to fucking, you have to breathe back in, and you breathe that new life back in, and we can create something that's bigger and better and more bold and more beautiful than we had before. Because, and I think that's the big thing that's coming, it's come away from us, is I'm able to, I feel a renewed sense of agency about what my future personally can be and will look like.
Mm.
And I think that if we can walk out of this, to, you know, as a group, as a society, with that renewed sense of purpose around creating the society and the future that we believe in and that is possible, then that's a wonderful thing to come out of a fucking very horrible time.
Mm.
Well, it's just that thing that everything is possible. Like, anything is possible now, and when you're moving at such a pace, it's terrifying to take the taxation from pokies, for example. The government would shit their pants if, you know, if that was just to disappear, and it's disappeared for a moment here. But let's say something happened where it had to disappear.
Yeah.
They'd find another way, and they'd fucking just get on with life. The same way as, like, if we had to, you know, if beef was banned tomorrow, we didn't have to sell, couldn't sell burgers, we'd find something else to fucking sell. You know,
we would buy a lot more chicken.
But the world will just, you know, it's, we always, we speak about it in the hospitality sense a lot, when, you know, the people got really integral roles to your business, whether it's a group position or just within a venue, and, you know, they're terrified to quit because they're like, oh, what's this place going to be like without me? It's like, I'll tell you what it's going to be like. Exactly the fucking same, just you're not going to be here.
Yeah.
Like, the world just continues to turn. Like, you just get on with things.
Yeah. People are adaptable. Governments are very fucking adaptable, as much as they act like they're not.
Yes. And now everything's possible.
It's interesting to see how quickly people are already adapting, because nightlife and dining isn't the same place that it used to be. Like, if you want to go, I'm trying to get a table for Saturday night in Wollongong. I'm going to his place at 10:30, and we're trying to figure out where we're going to go for dinner. Now I've learned I got to be organized. Make a booking, turn up to your booking, be organized, know where you're going to go. Fuck, it's not that hard.
We were fucking spoiled. Like, we were so spoiled. Like, we were lazy and we were spoiled in Western society. In Australia, we have been so fucking blessed, and it is our blessing has dulled us into a sense of fucking absolute stupidity. We have just been bludgeoned.
Giving one-star reviews because you couldn't get a reservation.
Absolutely. bludgeoned to death by our own fucking luck. Our blind luck, which we claim. We claim the luck of Australia as young people. Mm. We didn't fucking build this country. You know, it's an insane fucking proposition to just sit around making claims on and being so entitled to things that we didn't build. And, you know, the chickens have come home to roost, man. And now it's time to wake up and fucking take responsibility for these things. Like, thank you to the local fucking restaurant that you loved and you always took for granted and never tipped enough.
Mm.
And what happens when they're fucking gone for 4 weeks and you have to fucking eat your own shitty cooking and you're making the world's most terrible bread, you know, and following some cunt on Instagram who's fucking claimed the fame's around fucking swearing and not, you know, don't use canned tomatoes or whatever.
You invented swearing.
Oh, fucking hell. You know, like, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I really thank God for my local fucking bistro.
Yeah. Mm.
Because they cook for me, and yeah, I'm going to leave a bit more of a tip. We've been fucking spoiled to a point.
I hope it's like, and instead of being like gone down in history as what potentially could be a depression, it just goes down as the great humbling of society. Yeah, like everyone has got humbled.
That's great.
Everyone just shut the fuck up. Like, yeah, that idea of, you know, like at Underground, like we said, we always had to have at least 7 staff on, and whether 10 people came in or 50, it made no difference because you couldn't just have one person on because you'd get terrible reviews if someone had to go to the bar and order a drink.
Yeah.
Like, because they're that fucking spoiled. They're like, oh, this is not like the last time. It's like, well, we can't just afford to burn money so you don't have to get up off your chair. You know what I mean? Like, it's insane.
Over everything that we've talked quite a lot about, the good things that might come out of this and the change hospitality is going to make. And I think a lot of this is going to come from customers just being a bit more appreciative and being a bit more understanding. Because most of the things...
less entitled.
Because most of the shitty things in hospitality come down to those kind of issues. And you do things and things that everyone does is normally to try and negate that. So whether it's like, you know, trying to... venues who try and please everyone by having this fucking ludicrous sized menu and, or, you know, turn the music up and down which each customer says, or turn the fucking air conditioning down. It's like, it's always to try and please someone because that's the game we're in.
Yeah.
But I hope it gets to a point. Like, humanity shows that humans have got very short memories.
Yeah.
Like, people go to Germany on holiday all the time now. it's like go to clubs in Berlin to hang out. Like, it's a
beautiful place.
Like, it's, you know, just, I'm joking, but obviously, but it's, yeah, the world has definitely got a short memory. Like, and but I hope, I don't know, like, this generation, as much as they get scolded for it by the bloody, by the boomers.
But I think you're right there, Kenny, but there's a secondary point to what you're making, which is that Germany wrestled with what had happened and they resolved a lot of the fucking problems that they made reparations. I was reading something this morning about the policing system in Germany. They have to sit through, like, so over several years. Like, they look at the history of German policing, the rise of Nazism, they do cultural sensitivity courses. They're IQ tested before they come in. They're personality tested to make sure that they're as fit for the policing style. And it's basically all around minimization and de-escalation, which is the cornerstone and the fundamental, like, what upholds their policing system now. Which is in direct response to something that they deeply remember, and so whilst, you know, that people have forgotten, and I love Berlin. I've never been. I've heard the most amazing things about Berlin, but I'm in love with the idea of Berlin and what it stands for nowadays, and the support of the arts, etc. But the reality is, like, there is a deep remembrance to really important moments, and I think we can have that collectively right now about
they have
shaping
to
what
tear
we do.
All their systems down and start again.
Yeah,
and they've got.
Well, we told them down for them.
They basically had to, and they had their money. But then they went on quite quickly to have some very high living standards, and one of the, you know, world's best economies.
Yeah,
100%. By looking everything, taking it down, and being like, oh, like, let's not celebrate that. Let's remember it.
Absolutely.
Let's not forget, but let's move on.
And that's
it.
And hopefully that's what we're staring down the barrel of. And it's, you know, before all this shit hit the fan, like this generation that was saying it gets scalded, like the Greta Thunbergs and stuff of this world, like. They seem to be more like striving for a different world More than any other. I mean, I don't know. Like, look at this. You could argue 60s and say like they were always pushing boundaries, whatever. But it's, I don't know. It seems to be on a much wider scale. It's politically, it's environmentally, it's socially.
There
it's
were
racially,
pockets before. There were little pockets. Whereas it seems to be a far more global push.
Yeah.
That's
you just get the fuck out of their way. Like the fact that these like 18-year-old fuckers ruling countries, just get the fuck out of their way. Like
the presidential election this year in the United States. You know, 76-year-old and 77-year-old.
If my Uber driver was 70. I'd get the fuck out.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. So well, it's crazy to think. Well, I mean, what, 77? So what? We're talking 80, 81, 82 at the last year of the next term.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Like, and that's the most powerful position in the world. Like, 82-year-old people with a
clusterfuck
holding
and
the
like,
steering wheel.
Looking
not letting go. There was a time when they were forced to let go of the wheel, and that was a very positive thing for the people coming through because new ideas could penetrate. And now the reality is we're living with old people's ideas on what young people want and what they need and what's good for the future. They don't have a future. Their future's so close to the fucking end that it matters zero.
Why should they be making decisions?
You know, like my daughter, she's 7. Her future is worth more to the world than mine is because I'm closer to death.
Mm.
It's just fucking, it's just fact. Hi, just upstairs. Someone trying to find the rooftop of the Lansdowne. we'll be sorry.
This is political talk.
All right, let's pivot because you just mentioned upstairs and we've got to wrap it up. But tell us what's going on upstairs. Let's quickly finish it off. I mean,
we opened a fucking rooftop bar in the middle of winter
in the middle of lockdown.
Middle of a pandemic.
Yeah. I mean,
and it's sick.
Adaptation.
And it went off.
Yeah, and it's busy.
So you opened like this week though, like beginning
3 weeks ago.
Three weeks ago.
Yeah.
No, we only opened Tuesday, Wednesday this week, which has been a complete bust, even though the weather's great. But we're open Wednesday to Thursday to Sunday upstairs, and it's been fucking heaven.
Awesome.
It's been so great. It's been so good.
What was that space before? Was this anything else?
There's a hostel above us, and that was kind of there for them. They had like their sort of communal kitchen and washing machines and shit upstairs.
It was never licensed for booze.
No, it was. We had a couple of parties up there when we weren't selling booze, like for like brand parties and stuff, where there was, you know, they were just giving away booze essentially. And Jakey's mother-in-law got married up there, but it got licensed. It got pushed through really quickly because it was all about like what is it? It's like
historical use.
Because it had always been used as part of the building, they couldn't really say no. Like if it was up there just full of AC machines and it was like just dead pigeons and you would just go like, we're going to fit this roof out now and stick people on it, they'd be like, nah. But historically, it was always a floor on the plan. It was a usable part of the building. It just wasn't licensed. So you just wanted to get the boundary extended, and it went through quite quickly.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, looking forward to summer up there.
Mate. Man, it's fucking great today. Yeah. Like, to be honest, it's 20 degrees in Sydney today, and like, there's not a cloud, barely a cloud in the sky. It's fucking glorious up there.
Fingers crossed. It says between. I looked at the weather forecast this morning. This is like our life now. Just always looking at it. It's it's sunny all day, raining between 6 and 8. We're like dinner time. Like,
worse than you fucking surfers.
We started a thing called the Turf Report, which we're going to put out every day to let everyone know if we're open or not.
Yeah,
but it's 69 great. Degrees out there, Kenny.
Some guy commented on it. It was like 69 degrees Celsius. You never believe it. Guy goes, I'm only coming when it's 666 degrees.
Cool.
Yeah.
So what was that?
Yeah.
You fucking loser.
Sweet. So Mary's Burgers and Beers upstairs.
Yeah, man.
At
it's
the
a
fuck, down.
It's Mary's on a rooftop.
Yep.
Beautiful. It's a simple thing.
Like a festival. We've done a lot of music festivals now, and it's got that backstage festival vibe. It's cool.
Yeah,
it's
cool.
Nice. It's nice. It's a bit quieter than, well, apart from that you hear the buses, but we don't have any sound because we're not allowed sound.
Just something about sitting on a rooftop.
Yeah.
Doing what it is.
That's
it's
nice.
Just like, you're like, yeah, cool. Rooftop.
Yeah. There's a lot. I don't know. I mean, I'm not from Sydney, but there's not that many really casual places on rooftops.
Nah.
That you can't find.
Or with a bar in it. Like, yeah. There's a few that you can sit on a roof and you got to go downstairs for a bar. To actually have the bar there is actually quite... Because a couple of pubs on King Street have rooftops, but I don't think the bar's on
the
roof.
Not allowed to, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sweet. Awesome. Guys, anything else you want to
talk we launched about? A fucking podcast, motherfuckers.
Yeah, talk about your podcast.
Yeah. Which we'll have you guys on, and we'd like to ask some questions from you guys in the future. Is that cool? Yeah,
mate, we do so much question asking, it'll be bloody relief.
Yeah, I'd love to. We'd love to have you on. Anyway, our podcast called The Fat, you can find it on our YouTube channel, which is Mary's TV, and also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. But yeah, we're just talking to bands and
and chefies and winemakers and just anyone who's interesting, and we try to do a similar thing to you guys. Just ask a couple of conversations, let it go.
So we did this empty room sessions, which is spawned from the fact that no one could come into the music venues. So we have band, the life that will sort of lead from now on will be like the bands will play. They come and play even during soundcheck once that world starts to come alive again. Mm. So they do a little 3-4 song set. And we film that. And
that's
then
awesome.
And we'll interview
them. Yeah, we fell in love with YouTube ourselves personally. And then we're like, fuck, we should start a channel because we've got all the fucking bands and all the stuff right there. And, you know, then COVID happened. We're like, let's just fucking get it done. And we wanted to come up with something that would reference COVID, but then be ongoing. So
that's awesome.
Bands who play here or at Mary's Underground, we'll start hitting them up to start doing, you know, they'll do the empty room session.
That's so sick.
Filming as a part of their sound check. Yeah, do a podcast with them, then they get on stage and play their fucking show to their punters. So,
welcome. We're excited. Welcome. You got them there.
Yeah,
exactly. So, hopefully, from this podcast, maybe we'll have more than one listener, which is me. That's listening to the sound of my voice. Yeah, I'm going to sleep to it.
All right, awesome.
I bet you do. Fuck off.
You can't get involved. All right. Guys, let's leave it there. If anyone out there wants to get in touch with us, thefoodfightpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on social media, all the rest of it. Jake, Kenny, Mary's, Unicorn, Lansdowne, PNV, Rooftop, Mary's Underground, all the rest of it. Guys, thanks. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been an awesome chat.
Really appreciate your time. Thanks for thinking of us.
Thank you so much.
Cheers, guys.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has 2 limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.